I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!
All right, ladies and gentlemen, all right. Welcome once again to the Ed Springsteen Show, brought to you by the MVM Radio Network, home of LouisvillePolitics.com as well. And I tell you what, as always, there's always something to talk about. We never run out of content. This whole sequester, I don't know if you guys have noticed or not, but the internet is still working, so the government didn't have to shut down too bad, or they took the internet with them. So many things to talk about. We're just going to get right to it. But first, as always, welcome, Mr. Ed Martin. How are you, sir?
Doing all right, Mr. Springsteen.
Man, I tell you what.
Said there, it's like we always rehash. It was like, oh, my God, can we do so four or five times a week? You know, well, we talk about the material. It's like we should just clarify to everybody that we would love to run out of material.
Well, you know, that's very true.
We would love it. You know, wouldn't it be great if we just got on to the, hey, Jim.
Well, it'd be good for you.
Anything, I can't think of anything stupid the government's done or anything, all our politicians are really sharp and they're really honest and they're transparent. They're making all the right decisions. Hey.
Well, you know, it would be.
Go play some rugby.
Now, that's it. It would be easier for you to do because you'd rather be playing rugby, and you're a lot more soft-spoken than I am. You know, for me, I mean, I live and die by having something to talk about. So if we ran out of content, I'm sure I would suffer. But I promise you, I would make adjustments and be just fine. A couple of local stories that I just want to point out real quick because I thought was very, very interesting. Miraculously, our local media is not telling anybody about this. But, you know, violent crime is way up in Louisville. Homicides and rapes, the crime is up. It's up by 5 to 10%, and it's going to continue to climb. This is a story nobody is covering. We actually had to find this online at another site outside of Louisville. So for you guys that are in Louisville, start asking your questions why. Do your research and ask why we're not showing the stats on the real crime in Louisville and why police are out there harassing people and arresting people for asking what the officer's name is instead of doing their job and getting the drugs off the street. The second thing we got to talk about, Ed, this is probably more important than people actually will see because this is in the local media. Last night, the Metro Council, or I'm sorry, Thursday night, the Metro Council actually did something that is a very, very rare thing. They actually overturned a Louisville Metro Planning Commission rezoning rule. Apparently, Brent Ackerson, who probably has something personal to do with this particular property, and we're in the middle of investigating that now, but Brent Ackerson had a property in his district that was zoned R5 residential. Dr. Daniel Byrne, who actually owns that property, he wanted to change this from R5 residential to OR1, which would allow him to build a two-story dental office on this property. And interestingly enough, he did everything right. He went to the Planning Commission, to the Board of Zoning, all of that stuff, petitioned, made his argument. The Planning Commission agreed with him that would be an easy thing to do. They ruled to go ahead and change the residential zoning. And somehow, for some reason, the Metro Council stepped in, led by Brent Ackerson, and overturned the Metro Planning Commission's ruling to allow this office residential building. That doesn't happen, Ed. That doesn't happen. Have you heard of anything that might have made this happen?
I have no idea why it happened, but, you know, you'd think we were talking about everything from medical care to job creation, and here's a guy trying to provide both, and, like, wow, you're slamming the door in his face. Now, not that that's the first time it's ever happened. I mean, you know, I might know, cough, cough, a businessman who got jerked around when he wanted to, you know, expand his business in the city.
Well, we know all about Ed Martin at Brownfields.
I have no idea why it happened, but I'm glad people are paying attention because we've seen it with people like Tom Owens and others that have used it to enrich themselves and set themselves up nicely with zoning and get in on good buys and change the zoning, whatever. So it will be interesting. I'm glad people are looking at it for a change.
Well, what's really interesting is, I mean, this particular property is East End property. It's Sunset Terrace, near the Sunset Terrace subdivision. And what really makes this interesting is this area is already highly commercialized. So it's not like, you know, this was just some kind of a random act to throw a building in the middle of a residential neighborhood, you know, back in the middle of a subdivision and take down the neighborhood. No, this is actually already a commercial area for the most part. It has heavy, heavy traffic already. So this particular property, it was the right decision, and I can't believe I'm saying this because I very rarely agree with these guys on much of anything, but it was the right decision by the Louisville Metro Planning Commission to change this. It was basically just rubber stamp information, but Brent Ackerson decided to get involved and stop this from happening. So just so people know, this is a story we're going to be looking closely at, and hopefully we'll have some more information for you maybe tomorrow night or the night after. We're working on that now. In the meantime, this whole show is going to get stuck on this next topic. I'm sure it is, so we might as well just get into it. That's a couple of the local things I thought worth mentioning. But let's get into it. The world has not ended because of a sequester, has it?
Speak for yourself, man. I mean, I'm stranded. The roads that I usually drive home, they're gone. I don't know what's happened. I feel like I'm in the Twilight Zone. Oh, wait, hold on. My headlights were off.
Oh, there you go. And that's exactly what the sequester is. The headlights are off.
The sequestration, I mean, really, like we talk, it's a razor. It's like cutting yourself shaving. This is not like an amputation.
Right.
It's 2%. 2%.
Well,
how much? That's the government's getting 2% more off your paychecks now because they did it to you on your Social Security withholdings. So that's about what we're talking about here.
Well, and that's exactly it, because it's really fascinating to me. It actually works out to be somewhere around 2%. Actually, here, let's get to the real numbers. What we're talking about right now, the federal taxes at the beginning of the year, this is what really drives me nuts. Federal taxes at the beginning of the year raised 1.1%. That's not counting the Social Security 2%. So now the American people have had to sustain a 3.1% overall tax increase. All right, and that's based on $40,000 to $50,000 annual income. So that's the majority of Americans right there. You've got, you know, like I said, that includes the 2% raise in Social Security taxes. You also have this new 3.8% new taxes on any investment income over $200,000, which isn't a lot of money. You know, we look at this stuff. The American people essentially have had to put up with 4 to 5% overall and more taxes coming out of their money. So they're having to cut their budgets 4 to 5%. Okay? And the federal government is essentially griping about, like you said, 2%. I mean, you know, that's essentially all we are looking at is 2% in cuts, folks. How do these guys justify making such a mountain out of a molehill? I mean, you know, realistically, government spending is $3.8 trillion. Now, that's a staggering amount for most people to really think about, but $3.8 trillion, $85 billion, that is basically 2.2%. I don't understand what the fuss is. Well, I'll tell you what the fuss is. What's really disturbing most of all, I guess, about all of this is Barack Obama himself, because Barack Obama has went on this media campaign, aided and abetted by his left-leaning liberal media, to tell the whole world that the Republicans forced this sequester, that they're the problem, that it has nothing to do with him or his agenda. Yet Barack Obama was the one in 2011 who took the sequester to the Congress and asked them to pass it. Congress didn't initiate this action. Barack Obama initiated this action, and now he's blaming everybody but himself. What do you think about that?
Oh, yeah. I mean, let's face it. The budgets have gone up. The deficits have gone up. Everything's gone up. And, you know, one thing you don't talk about is inflation. I mean, the government, in order to keep financing itself, has the Federal Reserve jack the rate. You know, we're down into this quantitative easing for infinity, which is, guess what? That has a little to do with your gas prices and your food prices and everything else going up. It's not the hidden tax. But, you know, I think. Well, I don't think they do math very well, first off. As a matter of fact, I know they don't. I don't think they're very commonsensical. And as I've said before in some forums, you know what? These guys aren't business people. They're politicians. They're Chicago-style politicians. It doesn't matter. Kentucky-style politicians. And all they're good for is they go, they glad hand, and then they take care of their friends. And, they, you know, they're not doing the cutting. And I says, you know what? We need more of a small business mentality in there, because the knife work is unpleasant. You know, you've been there, I'm there.
But Ed, it's 2%.
A lot of unpleasantries that you got to do as a matter of survival, as a matter of being able to put the proper numbers up, whether it's a financial statement to a bank or what. And these guys, they simply don't know how to say no. I mean, I'd love to be their kids. They never say no. It's like, it's always got to go up. It's always got to be. And now they are so vexed right now that all of a sudden they don't get. It's not going to be more next year. It's not going to be more next month. And oh my God, you know, look at our congressman. You know, Congressman Awesome, they call him, John Yarmuth, or any congressman. Guess what, guys? Now you have to go home and tell somebody no. And that's what's killing them. They don't do that. You've got to tell somebody no.
Well, you know, and this is really fascinating because, you know, it totally is mind-boggling to me because, you know, once again, this really comes down to Obama. I mean, Obama has been quoted as saying that, you know, this sequester is arbitrary and stupid, but he's the one who initiated it. It is arbitrary and stupid. I totally agree. But he's blaming Republicans for this, and he's the one that initiated it. And for history's sake, folks, let me make this very clear. Back in 1936, President Franklin Roosevelt was reelected very solidly, all right? But he thought the Great Depression was basically winding down. Unemployment was starting to go down a little bit. Economic activity was starting to raise just a little bit. So Roosevelt and Congress got together, and they decided they were going to cut the government spending and raise taxes. That's similar to what we're talking about today, folks. What happened? The Federal Reserve tightened its reins. The economy couldn't withstand raised taxes at the same time they were cutting government spending. So the Depression came back and lasted until the 40s. Now, what changed in the 40s? Now, this is where we get into some of the same stuff we've been talking about for the last couple of weeks. What changed in the 40s was the U.S. needed a war. We went to World War II, and that's what ultimately revived the economy. Now, we continue talking on this show and many others around the country about war being an economic leveling field. And I don't think that there is any way we can avoid that. I think ultimately we're finding out that this is true, and, you know, we're going to go ahead and do that. You folks that are in the queue right now, we are not opening up for questions at this time. So, you know, I apologize for the inconvenience, but this is a discussion hour, so thank you. But, you know, it's very interesting, Ed. because this is what we've got going
on. War is an economic stimulus for people mm-hmm. who cannot figure out the cause and effect otherwise. I mean, you know, guys like John Kennedy figured it out. Eisenhower figured it out. Yeah, Reagan, you know, he kind of figured it out, but he still built it on war footing. But, yeah, I mean, we've had some great ones that have figured it out. Smart guys. So, yeah, when all else fails, you know, you get out the sabers and you start rattling them, and it's on, you know. You can
right.
start the draft, take a whole bunch of people off the unemployment lines forcibly,
mm-hmm.
you know. You can take excess output capacity and you can fill it right up.
Mm-hmm.
But that's for stupid people.
Well, that's exactly it. And, you know, we've got to start getting really serious about what's going on. You know, this whole sequester bomb, FDR was just one example. You know, if you guys want to talk about the real U.S. economy, let's look at history real quick. In 1929, going into the Great Depression, you know, federal spending was at 3.7% of GDP. Okay, in 2009, now I know this is a particular area of interest to you, Ed, because you've been arguing about it for 2 days online, but in 2009, federal spending was at 24% of GDP. And what's really alarming is, in 1995, federal debt was at 66% of the GDP, yet in 2011, federal debt was 97% of the GDP, and we have actually went over 100% since then. So, you know, we clearly need to do some spending cuts. Can there be any argument about that?
Well, I think, you know, spending cuts or tax breaks,
mm-hmm.
properly targeted, they're basically both have the same net effect on your bottom line. I don't know. What do you think, spending cuts? Yeah. Oh, no doubt. There's unnecessary spending going on. I mean, come on, let's face it. I'm sure there's probably a study out there about the average size of gerbil nuts or something. But
right.
So there's definitely room to get that whittled down. But by the same token, you know, the problem with these politicians is, again, they don't have a small business mentality.
Right.
They don't look at it. Okay, why? Why are we paying out so much unemployment benefits? Why are we paying out so much in government assistance? You know, why is the student debt crisis? That's going to blow up, and you know, as long as they're going to default, as soon as the kids can figure it out how to do it.
Sure.
Why do all the kids? You know, I ask the question often: why do all these kids feel like they have to take out loans to go to college?
Right.
Because there aren't any jobs. That's what it comes to. There aren't any jobs. It's the only job. You can't get a manufacturing job. You know?
Well, and that's the fascinating thing about it, Ed, because we've lost the total manufacturing base in the United States. We import anything that's manufactured now. We don't want to manufacture anything, which is where the good-paying jobs are, which is where our president and our leadership has failed. They would rather go out and make these irrational trade deals and import all this garbage that's taking away good-paying American jobs. We've got the capacity. We've got the people here. We've got the American spirit and American will to go out and make manufacturing number one in America again, or across the world again. But we don't have any political will because these guys
yeah.
are getting paid not to.
And
what's really interesting, too, I want to point this – I've got to point this out, Ed, because, you know
– I always think like the small business, you know, that's the thing.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody thinks manufacturing. I think big factories. It's like, you know, this government and pretty much most state governments are real good at ripping the guts out of small business.
Oh,
which
sure.
is manufacturing. You know, they're not – they have big smokestacks. They don't have their own foundries
mm-hmm.
or anything.
Right.
But manufacturing can be making shoes. Yeah, but you can't do it because the way the government's set up, all these politicians get their noses poorly planted on the, you know, up the asses of the major corporations and major donors, and nobody cares about the small business. And that's where you've lost manufacturing. It's just, you know, who's a steel fabricator anymore? You know, I know a couple.
Well, yeah.
But here's
something people to know, though, because this is very important right here. Because, you know, the last time we went through anything resembling this, would have been back in 1985. Now, I don't know if you remember the Graham-Rudman-Hollings Act. The Graham-Rudman-Hollings Act was basically the same thing. A series of spending cuts primarily hit the military and defense budgets. And I know this firsthand. I was active duty from 83 to 87. And in 1985, when they came out with Graham-Rudman-Hollings, over the next 2 years, I saw the downsizing of the military. And I saw what it was doing to the military. And you know what? We survived it. It didn't hurt. We were overbloated anyway. If we weren't all over the world today, we wouldn't bother. This $85 billion would be dropping a bucket. You know. But what was really interesting is from a New York Times article, that nobody really paid attention to back in May of 2011, including me. And I apologize to my listeners for that. There was a New York Times article back in May of 2011 when Barack Obama first brought up the sequester idea and was trying to convince Congress to pass this law that he is now saying is arbitrary and stupid. You know, he might as well look in the mirror. But it was very fascinating because we had one of our congressmen, and I'm not going to tell you who this guy is, but he said, fortunately, Graham Rubin Hollings was so contrary to the culture and the Constitution and the whole flow of legislative history, the first thing we in Congress did was to ignore it. So we've got a congressman saying, flat out admitting, that they ignored Graham Rubin Hollings because, you know, who cares? Even though that was a passed law, our Congress ignored it, all right? They went ahead and cut defense spending, but they ignored everything else out of it. And I find that very, very interesting. And this was actually said by Steve Bell, the Senate Republican's top budget advisor. He was around back then. So I find this very, very interesting that our own Congress is going to use that. And they act, you know, and Barack Obama is now acting like this is some kind of a new thing that's never been done before.
Yeah. Well, back in the day, of course, that was the first real time they tried it. And they came to find out that there were a lot of loopholes, you know, emergency spending and crisis or something. Mm-hmm. There were a lot of loopholes. Now, they have closed a lot of the loopholes. So, hey, guess what? So now you see, if you can't pass a budget, you can do the sequester. And then they wake up the day after and go, oh, crap, what do you mean? There aren't any loopholes? There's no way around this? They closed them off? just want to look at them and go, yeah. It's like, yes, you know, you basically told the American public, hey, we're so serious about passing this budget. By God, if we don't, we're going to let this happen. This is what's going to happen. So, you know,
well, that's exactly it.
Even a dysfunctional lot like us should be able to pass it with that kind of pressure. Guess what?
But if you remember it back in 2011, when they first approached this, Barack Obama is the one who approached this and took it to Congress. You know, John Boehner and them were actually the first ones that were really against it, although they didn't fight against it. They went ahead and acquiesced and said, you know, if the president wants it, let's give it to him, kind of a deal. You know, be careful what you wish for. You just might get it. Well, Barack Obama got it, but he's not being held accountable to it. And that's a disturbing thing for me. I don't think that we need any further proof. When you talk about Sperling, I think it's George Sperling. You know, he's Obama's chief economic advisor. He was interviewed over the weekend on NBC's by NBC's David Gregory. And I've actually got to give Gregory some props here because I don't like NBC. I don't think that they do a good job. I think they're liberal-leaning, and I think that they just follow what they're told to do, too. But he would not let Gene Sperling off easy. He kept asking Gene Sperling whether Obama had told the truth in the third presidential debate that the sequester is not something that he proposed. It's something that Congress proposed. Sperling finally, after trying to dodge around it three times, said that, yes, the sequestration was President Obama's plan. So we've got proof from his own advisors that he did this, and yet everybody else is still responsible. In the meantime, we've got history that shows us that, you know, we've went through sequester periods before, all the way back to Franklin Delano Roosevelt, all the way back to 1985 under President Ronald Reagan and Graham Rubin Hollings, and we have survived every bit of it, and it did give us some relief in the economy. So what is the big deal now when Americans are forced to put out 6 to 8% more of their paycheck and the government refuses to cut 2.2%?
Well, again, I think it's more psychological than anything, and I think there's another element to it beyond just these congressmen, honestly, being a bunch of wusses and not being able to have to go back to their constituents and say, oh, you know, all that talk of efficiency and cutting, and it's like, yeah, okay, I was lying. I really didn't intend to do that. Mm-hmm. So, you know, really, and they don't know how to tell people no. But I think another very important part of that is the American people are going to sit back. You know, and there are going to be some programs and some small numbers of people that are going to be directly affected by it. But I think what they're really, really scared of is that the American public, by and large, probably 99.9% of the American public is going to go, yeah, I don't get it. You know, you told me all this crisis was coming. It came, and I'm not feeling it. I'm not seeing it.
I hope
it.
You're right, but I think you're wrong.
And I think that's what terrifies the politicians. It's like, okay, they didn't fix it, and nobody cares. You know, the American public's going to go, you know what? 2% wasn't bad.
I hope you're right, but I think you're wrong, because I tell you, our society today has become so divided along party lines, political lines. You're either a socialist or you're a communist. I mean, that's the way people want to look at it now. And it doesn't matter which side of the fence you're on. The Uniparty is alive and well. So when we look at this, I think most people see this, and I don't think that most people are going to sit here and say, well, it wasn't that big a deal. I think most people are still going to sit here using the whiny-ass, titty-baby way of life that they've gotten used to with the government handouts and still continue touting Obama's horn, because Obama's been getting away with this lie. There's a lot more that's going on right now than just this little sequester, and people aren't really paying attention. And you know what? We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to switch gears just a little bit and tell you exactly what's going on, because this sequester is just something thrown at us to keep us blinded from what's really happening out there. We'll be right back. Listen to the Ed Spencer Show right here on the MVM Radio Network.
Oh. Being a victim of crime is no joke, but you do have options that can help you avoid becoming a victim. I'm Ed Springson of the My View Matters radio show, and on behalf of myself and co-host Ed Martin, I urge each of you to help us fight against crime. You can do your part by calling Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE. Since 1982, Crime Stoppers has helped get over 23,000 criminals off the street with your help. Working together, we can make a difference to take our streets back. Please call Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE, or you can visit them online at www.582clue.com. Remember, Crime Stoppers always offers up to a $1,000 reward. Get involved and help make a positive change in your neighborhood. Thanks.
Advertisers, here's a great way to reach a quality audience. Get heard on My View Matters and make some noise in the marketplace.
Email myviewmatters@aol.com for advertising opportunities. Make a sound investment.
Everybody, gather around. I'm here to give you anything you like. You want free college, energy, mortgages, whatever you like. You have come to the right place. Why? I'll tell you why. Who can take your money?
Who can take your money?
With a twinkle in their eye.
A twinkle in their eye.
Take it all away and give it to some other guy. The government.
The government.
The government.
I love that song. Comedian Tim Hawkins with The Government Can. You can check that song out at timhawkins.net. You know, along with many, many others this guy's put out. I tell you what, he's an incredible comedian in putting out these kind of songs. You know, for you guys that are listening, 858-683-1326 or 502-805-0334. Those are the call-in numbers. I will not open the phones up for all these scammers who keep trying to call in and say stupid stuff whenever you talk about President Barack Obama. Sorry, folks, we don't play that game anymore. And the second thing is, for you guys who are actually listening in the queue, hit that number one on your dial pad, and we will take you into the room and see what it's all about. Anyway, meantime, you know, Ed, we're going into break. We're talking about this sequester, and there's a couple of things that people really need to know about. You know, we talked about how the average American citizen is losing money, more than 2.2%. I mean, we've had to adjust our budgets by more than double that in most cases, thanks to the new tax laws that went into effect in 2013. And we haven't even touched on Obamacare. You know, even with Obamacare, now we see where employers have admitted that they're going to put their employees at 29 hours or less because they don't want to hit that 30-hour threshold. So they're stuck paying for health care or offering health care. And so what that does is that puts the onus on the employees to purchase their own health care. And, oh, by the way, if they don't purchase their own health care, then they're penalized $1,500 a year by the government. So here we've got a situation where if you're used to working 40 hours a week, considered a full-time employee at a place like, say, the Olive Garden, Darden Restaurants owns these things, and they're taking their wage staff down from 40 hours a week to 29 hours a week, well, now you've lost 11 hours of wages, which don't mean much at $2 an hour. But when you average $30 an hour on tips, you've just lost $300 of your income each week because you're now under 30 hours that you're allowed to work. On top of that, you're either going to be required to spend at least $300 a month for benefits or pay a $1,500 fine. So now you're talking about taking this to a real cost to people of 20 to 30% of their income. Additionally, you know, you're reducing household spending by $125 billion a year, according to J.P. Morgan Chase. That's the biggest crook in the government, but even they're willing to say that. You're lowering gross domestic product in the United States by at least 0.6% each year. On top of that, food prices have continued to rise for the last couple of years, and they're expected to rise greatly this year. The U.S. Department of Agriculture sees food increases of at least 3.5% to 4% in 2013. Now, we just talked about the health care premiums. They're going to jump 6.3%. You know, that's just a premium alone, not counting the fact that you're going to have to pay for something you didn't have to before. You know, when you get into all of this stuff, we've got, you know, what is going on here? People with incomes under $75,000, people that are older than 50, people with lower levels of education, you know, they all agree that things are getting worse. And our government has a problem cutting 2% of the budget and helping the American people. What's going on with this, Ed?
Oh, it's just, like I say, it's always the same arrogance. I mean, let's face it, by and large, the government is made up of a bunch of rich people. And they're, you know, and the liberal rich people, you know, they have, they're suffering in a lot of cases from liberal white guilt.
Right.
And the conservative rich people are basically suffering from I got mine, screw you. You know, or and they're all suffering from, you know, hey, I'm going to take care of the right people, so I got to, you know, my stupid nephew can get a job when, you know, with a bank, even though he can't add. But mm-hmm. It's just, it's the same old incompetence. It's the same old, and it begins, you know, it begins with party politics. And I, you know, now that I'm a Republican, I kind of hate to say that. But it's just us against them. It's how much power can you consolidate? I mean, that's all they care about. You listen to people like anybody, Mitch McConnell. You know, his goal was to make Barack Obama a one-term president. Really?
Well, I know, and that's true.
It wasn't to, you know, increase jobs and prosperity and the tax rolls and world peace and stuff like that. Really? Yeah, you know, that's what we're stuck in. And you know, when that is the end-all, be-all for these people in Washington and Frankfurt and everywhere else, then this is what you're going to get. You know, the cause and effect, they don't give a damn about cause and effect. They don't give a damn about working people. They say it come election time, and you know, and they'll borrow some more money and feather the right nest, but they don't care. That's what it all comes down to. These guys don't care. It's a game for them. Who can get 51% of the House or the Senate versus the 49%? Who can get the simple majority? And as long as – and that's the only thing they're playing for. They don't get
and I totally agree with you there. No. I mean, I don't know what else could be done here, Ed, because I mean, we're looking at the Fed. You know, this isn't the first time we've had sequesters. And quite honestly, Kentucky – and this is something I learned today. You guys need to check out Kentucky Progress by David Adams, who was Rand Paul's former campaign chairman. You know, but he even mentioned in an article today that Kentucky has faced 11 sequesters. You heard me right. 11 sequesters right here in Kentucky since 2008 when Governor Steve Beshear was elected. So when we look at this, when we look at this, sequester isn't anything new for us. We've had to make do, but it hasn't made a difference either, because the so-called automatic spending cuts that are part of sequester in Kentucky haven't done a damn thing. Our spending continues running rampant. They have refused to deal with the retirement pension problem by the House throwing out Senate Bill 2. If you want to look at what's going on a national level, the Fed has kept short-term interest rates extremely low. They've printed all kinds of money to try to put pressure on long-term rates so they can make borrowing easier for businesses and individuals, and we know that hasn't happened. And retirees and people that are actually saving money are basically getting 0% interest on their bonds and savings accounts, so their retirements are screwed. When we look at all of this, you know, even the Feds are trying to sit there, Ben Bernanke, and a lot of the mainstream, you know, paid-off liberal-leaning economists are saying that because of the Fed stimulus policies, the housing and financial sectors have recovered and the downturn doesn't get any worse, which is a lie. We know the housing crisis is still a housing crisis. There's not been one damn thing done other than give the banks free money. They have not done one damn thing to help the homeowners who are losing their homes or do what they were supposed to through the president's own program, Mr. Barack Obama, the president of the United States, your home affordable mortgage program, the HAMP program. That was a dismal failure. So we've got all of these things going on. People are losing everything they've got. They can't save for retirement. They're not getting anything back. And our government's worried about 2.2%. It's amazing to me. But, you know, I promised our listeners, Ed, we were going to go down the road in the second half, and we're going to do that right now. We're going to do that right now because here's what's really going on, folks. All right? You can get mad at me. You can call me a conspiracy theorist. You can do anything you want to do. But every play that's going on right now is...
I'll call you a conspiracy theorist, sure.
Well, you always have. That's fine with me. You know, it don't bother me a bit. But here's the deal. We all know about Austria and Hitler and Germany and World War II. We all know what was going on with all that. Historically speaking, you can look it up online and read what really happened. And what I see right now in America is the same playbook. You take the people's money, you starve them out, you take their weapons. The government has bought up $1.6 billion bullets through the Department of Homeland Security, mainly 40 cal and 9 millimeter ammo, which is the most prominent handguns in America today. You can't find 40 mil and 9 mil ammo. I've looked. I've done an internet search. I've looked.
I have too.
It's crazy. You can't find it because the government bought up all the rounds. Now, the government has decided to go even further. The Department of Homeland Security just went out and purchased 2,700 mine-resistant, armor-protected vehicles. Now, they didn't purchase these for overseas use. This is the Department of Homeland Security. They went and got 2,700 mini-tanks to patrol American streets. Now, what's really going on, folks, is they want to starve us out. And as far as I'm concerned, if you want to go down a conspiracy theory road, let's have at it. They're trying to take over. There's no doubt about it in my mind. Why do you need armored tanks on American streets? Why do you need to own all the ammo so that Americans can't defend themselves? Go ahead, Ed. It's on your dime.
Well, I don't know, but, you know, I'll tell you what. I've been trying to locate some ammo, and between the lack of availability and when you do find out the price, I'm not real happy about that. And I'm not a conspiracy theorist. I'm just a disgruntled consumer right now, but I was going to say if any of the listeners want to set it up, we can do an over and under on how much longer Ed's going to be on the air, because usually when it says the C word, he has, let's just call him, problems.
Well, they usually like to take me off the air when I get into this point, and that's fine. But, you know, I'm trying to understand, you know, and if you really want to go into it, let's start looking at defense contractors. Navistar, this MRAP is a Navistar vehicle, all right? Navistar is one of the biggest defense contractors in America. They buy a lot of favors, folks. But somebody explain to me why we need 2,700 MRAPs for American streets. We know that drones are illegally, and I say illegally with full force here, folks, because our Constitution doesn't allow us to be under surveillance freely just because they want to. We have drones over on American soil right now illegally photographing people, their homes, or where they're at. We've got 2,700 mini-tanks, if you will, going to go onto the streets of America to keep people in gear. The government has all the ammo. Are they worried about a revolution? There's your conspiracy. Are they worried about a revolution? Is this a coup d'etat? Is this a government taking over? I want to know. Go ahead.
Well, I don't think so. My initial thoughts are going to be is that we're winding down a war, so they need to keep generating sales for their pals in the complex. So I think a lot of these things are just going to see it. They're just going to park and rust.
You think they're going to buy up 2,700?
They're going to be paid for.
You think they're going to buy up 2,700 mini tanks to be used on domestic soil in domestic neighborhoods, in my neighborhood, your neighborhood, and they're just going to leave them in a warehouse to rust? That defies logic.
It's the government. I think you're going to leave them out to rust, just like you did the trailers for the hurricanes and everything else. It's the government. And they probably, who knows, we don't see the contracts. They probably have a certain amount of vehicles that they're required to purchase, so they have them domesticated, I guess you could say.
I've been in the military, active duty. I was inventory management specialist. I was document control. I see contracts in the military. I've tracked contracts in the military. And I know how that mindset works. This federal government is not going to buy up 2,700 vehicles to leave sick. There's no doubt in my mind about that. They're not going to put these 2,700 vehicles and distribute them throughout the bases just so they can ride them on base. These are domestic vehicles. These vehicles are being retrofitted. They are being retrofitted to work on our domestic streets, our roads, America's highways. Now, if they were to tell me and go public and say that these 2,700 vehicles were only going to be used in the Arizona mountains and only going to be used on the Mexican border for defense, and they left them there, I think most people would be okay with that because we're trying to defend our borders. They're not willing to go on record with that. They're not willing to go on record about anything or what their design uses are for these vehicles. When you couple that with all the ammo that they have bought, you know, as our good friend Paul over at Stop It asked in the chat room, would our U.S. service members turn on their own citizens? Because right now, nope. I ultimately believe that's what we're getting to. I think the government wants to take over the streets. I think that they want to control us and force us into subservience. They don't like a free America. I think Barack Obama has done everything he can to get rid of freedom in America. I think that's proven by his associations with the Muslim Brotherhood, with Valerie Jarrett, with Hamas, and all the other psycho people around the world that he invites to the White House. I think when a president goes ahead and takes money and gives you political favor and access to the White House, including high-level security meetings, which I believe are happening, can't prove it yet, then I think we've got serious concerns. This president isn't running this country right now, Ed. This president is doing exactly what Rush Limbaugh said he was doing months ago. Rush Limbaugh said this president is doing nothing more than campaigning, but he doesn't have an office to campaign for. He's in his last term. So why is he campaigning? Unless there's a coup d'etat. Now, I'm not saying that he's going to try to keep the presidency after 2016. Not yet. But I am saying America is getting ready to go through a serious restructuring, and I'm kind of seeing the writing on the wall where I don't think peaceful revolution is necessarily going to be possible anymore. It may come down to armed conflict, but our government holds all the cards. Go ahead.
Well, I'll just say I don't think that's where we're headed. I think in years past, I think it could have happened, but I mean, just something as simple as peaceful resistance. I mean, the fact of the matter is, one of the questions you always ask is, what would they gain from it? I mean, they're already wealthy. I mean, what would they gain from enslaved? I mean, would they be forced labor, forced anything? Hey, what do you gain? You're not gonna. There's nothing to benefit. They're already powerful. They're already rich. They're already secure.
There's plenty to benefit.
So if you enslave a people, I mean, what are you going to get? That's always the thing. I mean, are they going to live more luxuriously? Is they're going to eat better or what? I just don't see anything in Maslow's hierarchy of needs where it would make any sense. Now,
I think I just think they're just insecure and they're incompetent and they're feathering the nest of their donors. That's how I view most of it. That's how I view most military action overseas and, you know, most protracted or expensive military. I just don't think it's there.
If you've got all the ammo, you have to shoot the ammo to replace it. If your military contract is with somebody who makes ammo or a defense contractor and they want to get ammo, you don't have room to store the ammo. You're not going to build a new warehouse. You're going to expand what you have there. It's a natural progression.
The government will build a warehouse. They did it for
years.
Well,
yeah, but they're not going to build a warehouse, just leave ammo there. At the height of the Iraq War, we shot off 5.5 million rounds of ammo per day. I'm sorry, per month. My apologies. 5.5 million rounds of ammo per month. We have already exceeded replacing that and went well above and beyond it. We've got a full stockpile of all the ammo that's available for the 40 cal and 9 mil, which is the most prominent weapon in America. Okay? If they were worried about it, they'd buy up all the ammo for their submachine guns that they're using on the battlefront. Or they'd buy up all the rifle ammo. Why are they buying up all the handgun ammo? Because handgun is typically a weapon of choice of Americans in self-defense. That's the only thing that makes sense to me. So they're going to have to expand that ammo, because if the goal is to keep enriching the contractors that they are beholden to because they continue giving them lobby money and keeping them there, if that is their goal, then you've got to continue buying so that you can continue getting the lobby money so that you can continue being rich. If you're going to have something to purchase, you've got to expend something to justify the purchase. You can't justify a purchase if you've got 10 billion rounds of ammo sitting in a warehouse, just sitting there. So you got to get rid of it.
Yeah, but
when
does the government justify
a
purchase? The government doesn't justify purchases. You know,
to date.
Say, well, they put it in a warehouse. Of course they will. They'll lease a warehouse from one of their buddies and they'll store it. I mean, it can't take up too much room, given the size of the bullet. But like I say, and the other thing is, you know, a lot of military guys. I know a lot of military guys. I just don't think that the guys with their fingers on the trigger, I don't think they're going there. I just don't. You know, the police, they live next door to you. You know, they're your neighbors. Their kids go to school.
Sadly.
With you. I don't think they're going to open up on you because, you know, there's no place for them to hide either. If it turns into it, again, there's 100 million guns owners in the United States and more guns. So,
I totally disagree. I don't see it.
I've made the argument a lot of times in online forums and stuff. I just simply do not see a civilian military force, a civilian police force firing on their own. I don't see them. You know, there'll be some incidents, but
we see it every day.
Once it reaches a tipping point, I'm sorry, these guys are going to look. You know, if things start heating up, they're going to look and say, "Dude, this is not in my pay scale. I am not going to war with this civilian population. Not going to happen."
But they're already at war with civilian population. We see it every day. How many stories do we see every day where a police officer has literally beat the hell out of somebody who was just standing there, has become overaggressive and violated their rights, their constitutional rights? How many times Ed, I was arrested for saying, "Sir, can I please have your name?" when I wasn't even next to the scene that this cop was involved in. You know, these cops today, I got news for you, these civilian cops today will do what they're ordered to do. They really will. And I say that, and I don't mean to make light of that, because I've always been a supporter of the police. But over the last year, 2 years, I'm seeing a disconnect between these so-called, you know, police officers who are there to protect us, not doing their job protecting us. They become the aggressor, all right? And that's an alarming thing to me. As a member of the military, I know the brainwashing that goes on in the military. I went through basic training. I went through tech school. I went through the whole military way of life. I was active duty, again, for 4 years. The military breaks you down in basic training to your basic form. That's their job. And then they rebuild you into what they want you to be. Nothing but a robot following orders. You don't see other cops ratting other cops out when they're sitting there watching this abusive behavior. You see them get involved with it and help them and then try to cover it up. It's the same thing in the military. We see daily occurrences of that in the military about cover-ups and schemes. And what ultimately happens here is, From my experience back in the 80s, and it's a whole different mindset today, it's even worse today than it was then. But from my experience, what you're going to find is 20 to 25% of the military people will refuse to engage against civilians when they're ordered to take over. But then you still got 3 to 1 that will. And that's the problem. Most of these military grunts, if you will, most of the military are uneducated, poor people. They join the military to get a way of life. They join the military for food in their belly every day so they're not starving. They join the military for a roof over their head so they're not sleeping in the cold and the wet. And then you get there and your mindset changes to some degree because now you've got somebody that's willing to take care of you as long as you do what they tell you to do and take care of them. And that's part of that mindset mentality that gets changed from basic training on. I see the military doing exactly what they're told to do. I see the National Guard doing exactly what they're told to do. And I see the American people with no recourse. I honestly believe that that's coming. And it's only because of my personal experience seeing these brainwashed automatons continue doing what they were told to do rather than doing what's the right thing to do. Comments?
Well, you're entitled to your opinion. I just don't, like I say, I don't see it. I know a lot of young kids that have gone into the military, and they're just not, they're not cut that way. And I think the demographics of the military, the fact that automatically most of the people in the military, let's just use gun control as an example, come from gun-friendly households. Most of them are rural, which, you know, that would be the people clinging to their Bibles and their guns. I just don't see that that can be programmed out of them. But, you know, it's like fully 77% of the military is rural. And I don't see them going there. I mean, I think you're going to have some, but I think at some point, I think in small incidences, you know, you can tell a SWAT team or somebody, yeah, this guy's bad news, and they go in and you videos of them shooting up the house and killing the poodle and everything like that. But I don't think on a wholesale basis that people, you know, I kind of be like Anne Frank. In the end, I still think people are good, and I think that a few isolated incidences, and maybe they become more common, and then they're going to have to start questioning. Everybody's going to have to start questioning it if it gets to that point. I hope they do.
To inherently think that most people are good.
I hope we don't get to that point. I think, you know, there's always going to be isolated incidences where there's a couple, you know, assholes beating the crap out of Rodney King, or whether there's a video on YouTube of a bunch of cops going in shooting up a house of a war veteran because they got, you know, and it was the wrong address. I mean, there are going to be incidences of it, but just like with gun control, there's so many guns and there's so many cops in this country, and it really still, for the most part, is a rarity when you see these things. You know, and I think the same could be said for the military. I mean, they see what they see, and then they come back, and, you know, they're affected, but I think in some cases they're probably less inclined to follow orders from their government when they see the fact their government doesn't care about them.
I have to totally disagree, because what I see now is we're looking at violent crime in Louisville alone going up. The number of homicides and rapes are growing up exponentially. This is indicative of what's going on around the country. Homicides used to be a rare thing. Now it's a daily occurrence. Chicago has over 40 shootings every weekend. So this has become a commonplace thing over time because people have just started accepting that this is something that happens. And as acceptance grows, you know, moral integrity and ethical behavior weakens. When we start accepting the worst of people as a way of life, then we start losing that accountability for that life. And ultimately, I think that's what happens here. You know, and I'm not making light of anybody who's been killed through homicide. I'm not making light of anybody who's been killed through rape. But let's look again. Let's look at Connecticut, Sandy Hook. Let's look at that mass shooting. 25 years ago, you didn't have a mass shooting every other week. It certainly didn't make the news. You couldn't find it because it really didn't happen that often. But people have lost such respect and value for themselves and human life that ultimately this is what we get. And I think what we're seeing in society is the same reflection, because the people who serve in the military are the people who came from this society. I was one of those people who went in the military. I was one of those people who knows firsthand the military way of life. I was one of those people who became that brainwashed automaton. Now, would I have had a moral or an ethical problem obeying orders if it involved me going against a U.S. citizen? You bet your ass I would. But most people at the time that I was in that generation felt strongly that we were doing the right thing, that we would never have to worry about domestic violence. The people going in today, domestic violence is a way of life. they're joining the military to get out of their crime-infested neighborhoods because our police officers are part of the problem, not part of the solution. They're joining the military to get away from having bullets shot into their homes every day in the poorest of neighborhoods. So when they get that better way of life, I think instinctively, and I don't mean to be make light of anything here, but I think instinctively, when you reach that way of life, that there's a better way of life, and you actually have something to lose, you're going to fight to keep what you've got to lose. And at that point, I think is where I'm really concerned with whether the military would attack their own people or not. That's the only thing I'm getting at. You know?
Yeah. And, Again, like I say, most of the military, almost 80% of it is rural. So, you know, that inner city analogy doesn't really, it doesn't work statistically. But, you know, hey, we can agree to disagree on that. I just don't see it happening. You know, I see it. A lot of the purchases are probably waste as much as anything. Some of them are probably patronage. And, yeah, there's probably a certain level of paranoia in the government, and maybe it's not domestic they're looking at. Maybe they're imagining some worst case scenario, and you know what? It ain't their money, so they'll just spend, you know, millions and billions of dollars on just in case, because, you know, just in case, but not likely, because it's not their money. They don't care.
Well, you know, I hope you're right, but I think you're wrong. That's just a matter of opinion, and we'll agree to disagree on that. You know, it is interesting, though, because when I look at the parallels in history, and I'm one of those people who firmly believe that if you don't learn from history, you're doomed to repeat it. And I think that applies across the board. You know, we just had a story come out about the Holocaust. Now they have been able to catalog 42,500 Nazi ghetto camps. This is incredible. Nobody ever thought for one minute that there was that many Nazi ghetto camps, even in Nazi Germany. But there were. And we're starting to see more and more of the master plan that came out from Hitler and how it took effect. And I'm starting to see more and more of that same style plan. Maybe not word for word, but certainly this is the same generic way of doing business that I think we have to be fearful of. But more importantly, I'm also noticing that, man, we're about out of time. Ed, final thoughts, my friend.
Well, you know, I tell you what, if it turns out that you're right, Ed, final thoughts, let's you and me just take a bunch of coupons, go to Whopper, go to Burger King, eat a whole bunch of Whoppers, so we'll just clog our arteries and our hearts will explode, but we'll die happy. Let's just go there.
Well, I'm already doing that, man. I tell you, you know that. You know me on a personal level. I tell you, folks, for me, realistically, you know, I'm just tired of the game. I really am. I'm seeing an America that I don't recognize. I'm seeing police officers that I used to trust to defend me and to protect me becoming the aggressors, because no longer are you victimized by bad elements of society. You're also victimized by the police and the people who are there to protect you. I see a military today that is out there that's basically out of control, not through their own fault, but because of their leadership. When we have our soldiers stationed around the world, as many as we do, we know that we can't sustain that for too much longer. But you've got to have some place for them to go. So we go out, we buy up all the ammo, we buy up 2,700 mini tanks to put on America's roads, and we put these soldiers on the roads. We already have video of soldiers marching in neighborhoods right here in America. We already have video of drones surveilling right here in America. To me, that's about as unconstitutional as it gets when I've got the right to protect myself and my privacy and my way of life. That is disturbing on many levels. For those who don't think that the military would turn on their own citizens, I tell you this. These drones are not surveilling American neighborhoods by civilians. They're surveilling by military. These drones fire off weapons because somebody pushes a button to allow that to happen. These are trained soldiers and trained military. If they're willing to put that potential and that possibility on America's streets right now, there is very little to stop them from going to the next level and pushing that button to hit an American citizen on U.S. soil. We already know that drones have attacked American citizens abroad illegally. We know that surveilling in the skies are illegal. I don't want to wake up tomorrow and see a mini tank coming down my neighborhood street with this daggone weapons aimed at me or my neighbors just because they can. That's not freedom, folks. That's not freedom. And if there's anything that this country has forgot, we have forgotten what it's like to be free. And that's thanks to the Uniparty. This isn't a Democrat problem. This isn't a Republican problem. This is a two-party problem. And we are allowing ourselves to be taken over slowly every day, in my opinion. Call it a conspiracy theory. I don't care. But when you wake up tomorrow and you read your Constitution and you realize that everything that's going on today is meant to make you subservient and controlled and an automaton as part of the beast, you'll have nobody to blame but yourself. So look in the mirror. Take responsibility. That's it for tonight. Mr. Martin, we will see you tomorrow night, of course, as always.
Yes, sir.
All right,
if
brother.
It's the drones or the mini tanks haven't taken you out by then.
I'll have a visit in the next 24 hours from somebody. I promise you that. It might be before tomorrow night's show. We'll find out. All right. That's it for tonight, folks. Don't forget to tune in tomorrow night, 7 o'clock,
right.
Same time, same channel. Have a great night, Mr. Martin. Thanks for listening, folks. We'll see you
then. Mr. Springfield.
All right. Take care. Hey, man.